This morning, we continue our exploration of the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew's compilation of what he believed to be the most important teachings of Jesus. And the passage that Nora just read to us is in many ways a direct continuation of the lesson we heard last week. You'll recall those difficult teachings we heard from Jesus in which he seemed to recast and reposition commandments from Hebrew Scripture. He did that not to replace or upend the law, but to bring it to fulfillment, to direct those who heard him to God's new creation, to the new community in which we are all called to live as brothers and sisters who love one another and trust one another and respect one another. It's with that understanding that we approach today's reading. Today's reading is in many ways more challenging than what we heard last week. It seems to ask the impossible of us. It asks us to do things that seem beyond our ability. Yet Jesus doesn't set us up to fail. He may push us, sometimes beyond what we believe to be our abilities, but he does so with a reason. Today's lesson from Scripture is meant to highlight just what it means for us to live in this new community, how the new creation of God is meant to be so different from the old reality, which all too often seems to still surround us. We start right off with this famous eye for an eye statement. One of the great misunderstood passages in the Bible, one that people have heard for years and have thought was a call to vengeance. If you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you back. But the reality behind this passage, drawn from the Old Testament, is that it was a call to proportionality, something that had been unknown in the ancient world. It had been that if someone had caused you injury, you often would go out and seek vengeance. If you beat me up, I would beat you up that much more. If you cost me my eye, I might take your life. The Hebrew Bible took a different approach and said that all things must be done within reason. A principle was being laid down here. And by the time of Jesus, it had been extended. So if someone had caused you bodily harm, you wouldn't go out and seek to do the same to them, but you'd seek restitution in court. Jesus, though, goes further now and says we shouldn't even be looking for restitution. We should set that aside. We should try to relate to others differently. And that's the message that he wants to carry through this entire lesson. Another passage that has led to misunderstanding is this bit about turning the other cheek. Many people have heard that and assumed it means that Christians are meek, that they're wimps, that they're ready to just take abuse. But that's not what's going on here. Jesus' hearers would have understood that the kind of slapping that was going on here was most likely somebody backhanding you across the face. The kind of thing that would have been done by a master to a slave or someone who was a social superior to one perceived to be an inferior. By turning the cheek, Jesus suggesting that you invite them to hit you again, but this time with the palm of your hand, the way an equal would strike another. Jesus was doing this not to encourage violence or fighting, but to say, if you're going to do this, you need to recognize me as your equal. I am a child of God. I am created the way you are. Jesus exaggerates when he teaches, and he also subverts. He's not saying if you've been hit, hit back. He's not saying if you've been hit, roll over. But if you've been struck, try to reframe things. He talks about going to court. Someone sues you for your cloak. In his day, most people owned only two articles of clothing, a cloak and a tunic. If someone took your cloak, they weren't only taking your protection from the elements, they were often taking the thing you slept in. And Jesus says, let them take your tunic too. He's once again making a point. Shame that person. Make them confront what they are doing. Make them see how they are trying to deprive you of your dignity. Go the extra mile. How many of us have heard that within the context of a church stewardship campaign? We need to top up the budget. So we're going to have an Go the Extra Mile campaign. But that's not what this is all about. In Jesus' day, Roman soldiers could impress civilians to carry their packs for 1 mile. Imagine being forced into doing something like that. You had no right to resist. But by turning around and saying to that soldier, I'll carry your pack an extra mile, you would have agency. You would have the ability to exercise some power to offer something. And showing just how sly Jesus can be at times, you could put that soldier in a very difficult spot. Because if he did let you carry that pack the extra mile, and his superior found out, he could be in big trouble. Difficult things Jesus asks us to do. But he asks us to do them because we can help people to start see themselves and hopefully the world in a different way. But he keeps pushing. He keeps asking us to do things that seem difficult. If people come begging, asking, don't begrudge them. Don't make a loan with interest. Give them what they need. And then he starts talking about the really difficult stuff. Loving people we don't like. Reaching out to them. But to Jesus, that is critical. If we aren't willing to reach out to those people, to pray for people we do not like, we are never going to be able to recast or reshape our world. We're never going to be able to live in this new creation that God has for us. And then finally, we have the kicker. Maybe to this point, some of us are thinking, okay, it's difficult to pray for people I don't like. It's difficult to respond to violence with fortitude and patience. It's difficult to help those who harm me, but I'll find a way to do it. But then we're told that we should be perfect like God our Father? How on earth are we supposed to do that? When I read this week's lectionary, I was reminded of those WWJD bracelets that were popular a few years ago. The letters stood for What Would Jesus Do? And when they were around, I often thought, what a terrible question. It would set people up in situations they couldn't manage. I'm not Jesus. Maybe it would be okay to ask me, what would Jesus have me do? So I could reflect and pray. But what would Jesus do? And what relationship does this have to the modern world? What would Jesus do when confronted with a difficult person on the insurance claims hotline? My first thought is, I don't know, Jesus didn't have a telephone. But of course, we're meant to think, how would Jesus deal with that person? Would he get angry? Would he lash out? No. And as I read these verses, and as I thought about them, familiar incidents from history came to mind of people who did the things that seemed to be difficult, people who responded to violence and to oppression and to injustice the way God would have us respond, with truth and fortitude and courage. I thought of the civil rights marchers. I thought of Nelson Mandela coming out of prison, not seeking vengeance on those who had imprisoned him, but desiring to build a country in which all people could participate. Of Mohandas Gandhi, who led his people to independence through a path of nonviolence. These are stories we all know, and they're inspiring, and yet they can seem distant with the remove of history. So as I thought about this passage, I thought of people I know, who I've met, who've been able to bring the principles and ideas here to life. I thought of Dick Nethercutt, a name I may have mentioned to some of you before. Dick was a member of the church in Concord. And many years ago, Dick's daughter was murdered. And at first, he experienced the welter of emotions that one would expect, anger and rage and a desire somehow to have vengeance. But with the passage of time, Dick concluded that that wasn't productive. It wasn't going to bring his daughter back, and it wasn't going to honor her memory. So Dick decided that he was going to dedicate himself to prison ministry. He wanted justice, but not the kind that exacted a punishment. He wanted justice that healed and restored. And so he worked with inmates, and he worked with those who had suffered at the hands of crime. He worked with the people who work in our prisons. Dick touched literally hundreds of lives. When he died a couple of years ago, the church in Concord was filled to overflowing. He understood this passage. He understood Jesus' call to respond to injustice and violence by following the way of the gospel. As I read these words, I thought of Loretta Filipov, another member of our church in Concord. Loretta's husband, Al, was on the flight out of Boston on the morning of September 11th, 2001. Al died that morning because of the fanatical hatred and perversion of religion of other people. If anyone would have a reason to be angry and filled with rage, it would be Loretta. But Loretta thought about Al and about her children and her grandchildren and the kind of world she wanted them to grow up in. And so she became involved in 9/11 Families for Peace. Now, I tell this story not because I want to start a discussion about whether or not it was right to go to war in Iraq or Afghanistan. I want us to think about one person and her response to violence and to hatred. It wasn't to engage in more violence or hatred, but it was to say, I choose a different way. I want to promote a path of peace and understanding. Loretta recognized that that path was not one of weakness or surrender, but it was a path that could change us. As I meditated on these verses, I thought of The Road Not Taken, which I'd like to read to you again. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood. Sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler long I stood, and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other as just as fair and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy and wanted wear, though as for that the passing there had warned them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay, and leaves no step had trod in black. Oh, I kept the first for another day. Yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. All too often in this world where God's new community is available for all, the old ways still prevail. All too often, God's way is the road less traveled. Our society beckons us down a different path. But God invites us to walk with him. And the further we go down that road with God, the less likely it is we will turn back. Because by traveling the path of the gospel, by following the way of Jesus, we are transformed. When we read these words from Matthew, telling the story of Jesus' ministry, we do so knowing they were written in the wake of Jesus' trial and crucifixion. Jesus didn't just talk the talk, he walked the walk. When he was confronted with violence and oppression by political powers and religious authorities, he responded in a way they did not understand. Imagine, nailed to a cross, what does he do? He prays for them. The way of the gospel is indeed the way less traveled. But it is the way of Jesus. And it is the way to life and hope and love. My prayer this day is that we may all travel that road.